Hello, everybody. I'm Howie Hawkins. I was the Green Party and the Socialist Party candidate for president in 2020. And this podcast, Green Socialist Notes, is about continuing to educate and advocate for the eco-socialist program that my running mate, Angela Walker, and I ran on in 2020. And today, I'm just going to start with some quick updates on the two wars we've been talking about for months. But I'll be brief because we want to focus on our guest today, Dan Kapilovits, who is the Green candidate for Los Angeles District Attorney. So today is the second anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And I will just say, in the context of two major wars in Gaza as well as Ukraine, we need to be consistent anti-imperialists. We need to reject the hypocritical double standards of people like Biden, who opposes Russian aggression in Ukraine, at least nominally, but not Israeli aggression against the Palestinians. And also, we got to oppose the double standards of the vulgar anti-imperialists, of some imperialism, of some pacifists and authoritarian leftists who support the national liberation struggle of the Palestinians, but not of the Ukrainians, simply because the U.S. nominally supports Ukraine's independence and sovereignty. So the vulgar anti-imperialists decide their position by thinking the enemy of my enemy, U.S. imperialism, must be my friend. And that gets you some god-awful friends like Marjorie Taylor Greene and J.D. Vance and Donald Trump and all the rest of those far-right MAGA Republicans who are blocking military aid to Ukraine. And to mark the two-year anniversary of their invasion, Russia launched dozens of drone strikes against civilian residences in Odessa last night. And Ukraine intercepted many of them, but their interception rate is going down. It was 90%. In the last couple of weeks, it's been around 50% because they're running out of air defense missiles and rationing them due to the holdup in U.S. aid. But that's apparently okay with the vulgar anti-imperialists, who are okay with Russian imperialism as long as it's in conflict with U.S. imperialism. We should oppose all imperialisms. And I could go on and on about this, but for now, we're just going to put three links in the chat to statements. One is by the Ukraine Solidarity Network in the U.S. Called Stand Against Genocide and Imperialism from Palestine to Ukraine. The second was recently issued by Solzhenitsyn Ruch, or Social Movement, the Democratic Socialist Organization in Ukraine. And that's called From Ukraine to Palestine, Occupation is a Crime, which expresses its solidarity with the Palestinian national liberation struggle, their opposition to Russian, Israeli, and American imperialism, and their support for an immediate ceasefire and humanitarian aid to Gaza. And the third is from the Russian Socialist Movement. It's called Stop the War Means Death to the Dictatorship. And I really urge you to read that. You need to hear from the Russian left their perspective on why Putin invaded and what they need to do to get their country back. So on a more positive note, I think our demands for a ceasefire in Gaza are moving the ball. Biden has recently shifted his message, and he's now calling for a temporary ceasefire after having spent months carefully avoiding support for any kind of ceasefire. And it's clear from U.S. diplomatic efforts going on as we speak in Paris that the U.S. wants to head off the Israeli offensive they're planning for Rafah to avoid more mass casualties. And Israel said it plans to do that by the beginning of Ramadan on March 10th. So top officials from the U.S., Israel, Egypt, and Qatar are negotiating in Paris as we speak on a proposal that Hamas has reported to find acceptable. And the deal would provide for a six-week pause in fighting in exchange of some of the Israeli hostages for the freedom for some of the Palestinian political prisoners. And it would provide for a surge in humanitarian aid into Gaza, which desperately needs it. And if that deal is successfully executed over those 6 weeks, there could be an extension of the ceasefire, more humanitarian aid, and another exchange of hostages and prisoners. But it's not clear that Israel will accept this deal. They seem to be the hard nut to crack. The political survival of Netanyahu and his far-right coalition partners depends on the war continuing. If it stops, there's going to be new elections. They're going to be out. Netanyahu will face criminal proceedings and may end up in jail, kind of like Donald Trump. So that's why we need to demand that the U.S. not just get behind a ceasefire, but use its military and diplomatic leverage over Israel to say military aid to Israel will be cut if it does not agree to the ceasefire and a law, you know, a permanent ceasefire. So I think, you know, we can say we're moving the debate with our statements and demonstrations, and we need to keep the pressure up. And I'll leave it there because we want to focus our time with Dan Kapelowitz. So he should pop up. There he is.
All right. Hi, Dan.
And Dan is the Green candidate for Los Angeles District Attorney. And this is the District Attorney's office in Los Angeles County is the largest local prosecutorial office in the United States. And Dan is a criminal defense attorney, often representing indigent clients, as well as pro bono defending animal rights activists. Greens have not often run for district attorney positions, but I think we should more often because they're so important to how the justice system works, or really doesn't work. So I'm going to let Dan take it from there and introduce himself and tell us about his campaign and why it's important. So Dan, go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I'm Dan Kapelowitz. It rhymes with for the hell of it. So, I am the only criminal defense attorney running. There are 12 people currently running for Los Angeles District Attorney. I think it's the largest field that's ever been. And I'm sure I'm the only green. I might be the only green criminal law attorney in Los Angeles. I don't know. Maybe not. But it's a nonpartisan position, so it won't list a party. It'll just because it should be a nonpartisan position. It's not really party politics. Shouldn't play into, charging decisions and things like that. Of course, the philosophy will come into play. I am the only candidate that is actually in court every single day. I know what's going on. I've done more trials, done more hearings, been in more courtrooms than all of the 11 opponents combined since Gascon took office, including Gascon. I don't know. I assume he's stepped inside a courtroom. He's never tried a case. He doesn't really know the ins and outs of actual criminal law practice. And so my critique of Gascon, the other 10 candidates that are going against Gascon, they think Gascon is too light on crime. They're more favor of being more punitive than the Gascon. Now, my critique is that Gascon, he came in with, and he gave these directives that were actually really good. Most of them are really good. They could have been worded a little bit better to survive some of these lawsuits, or only one really didn't survive a lawsuit, and the California Supreme Court is currently taking it up, and that is that he had refused to allege prior strikes, the three strikes law against people. So he had dismissed all the strikes that were alleged and wasn't alleging new ones. And then I think one of my candidates, Eric Sadal, with the DA union, they actually hired another candidate, Hochman, who they're supposedly against, to sue the county and Gascon. And so they were forced to allege strikes. But now the Supreme Court's going to hear it. But my critique is that Gascon, he has these great policies, but because he has no respect of his line deputies, they just completely ignore him. They do whatever they want. It's crazy. They allege enhancements, which he supposedly isn't in favor of. They seek high bail often, which he isn't in favor of, supposedly. On resentencing cases, although he doesn't allege gang enhancements anymore because they are inherently racist, they do fight against getting the gang enhancements stricken based on some new law defining what makes a gang enhancement. And so he really is punitive. Another thing he does, which has to be his policy and not just rogue line deputy district attorneys, is that a recent law makes it so most felonies can be charged either low term, middle term, or high term. So you might be facing, let's say, the least serious ones are 16 months, 2 years, and 3 years in prison. Now, usually before this law, judges would often just max a person out, punish them for exercising their constitutional right to go to trial. But the new law says that the presumptive sentence is midterm. And only if there's an aggravating factor found true by a jury or prior convictions can be found by the judge, only then can you get the high term. But now Gascon, he has alleged high term allegations in almost every single case filed because it's very easy to add one because planning is considered, at least in their mind, is considered an aggravating factor. This might go up in the courts, whether these are really true aggravating factors. Well, almost every crime, unless it's a spur of the moment thing, has planning involved. So they allege vulnerable victim. Well, any victim is usually pretty vulnerable. So they allege either one of those almost every time. So I don't know why Gascon's doing that. He does it when they're not even seeking jail time. Like, I'll get some first time offender. They're like, oh, we'll just get, you know, even maybe a misdemeanor for your client, but they still allege it so that often they're either, I don't know why they're doing it. It's probably because they're coerced to plead guilty to, say, the misdemeanor or to a probation deal. And then they have the 3 years hanging over their head. So they'll often make them admit to the aggravating factor before they can take a deal. So he is punitive. He has no control of his deputies. And people are saying, well, why were they listening to you? You're an outsider, you're a defense attorney. And that is true, you could say that. But what I say is, I actually work with deputy district attorneys on a daily basis. I get along with them. You have to get along with them. That's why criminal lawyers on both sides are way more civil than civil attorneys. I'd rather deal with the most outrageous prosecutor than probably the most benign civil attorney, because they're always going after each other, trying to get sanctions from each other. And they don't see each other every day because they don't go to court as often. So I get along with most prosecutors. Sometimes in trial, things get a little heated, usually, almost always. But before trial, which is 90% of the cases, we all get along. And so for one thing, so they know I know what's actually happening in the courts. The other thing is I would meet with all of them before I laid down my directives. That was one thing that Gascon did that really angered his lawyers, is that he just laid down these directives, didn't talk to anybody, didn't meet with the judges, didn't meet with the defense bar. I'm happy to meet with anyone. Even now, anyone can call me, talk to me. I'm happy to tell them what I think. I'm happy to listen to their ideas. I don't care where a good idea comes from. As long as it's a good idea, I would incorporate it. Some of my opponents actually have some good ideas, and maybe some of them I'd put in high positions in my staff, you know, and because they do have some good ideas, or put them in charge of departments where the ideas, because a lot of them just sort of have one idea, and put them in charge of that department. And the other reason I think I could actually get things done, have people listen to me, is that there are over 200 vacancies. There are about 750 deputy district attorneys now in the office. There's supposed to be about 1,100, so it's like 300 vacancies. I would immediately, as soon as I got elected, and even if I make it to the top two, I will immediately start talking to people about whether they would join the department. There are a lot of great criminal attorneys that would love to be in it. There are people that are city attorneys. There are AGs that would probably love to be in the district attorney's office, and there are defense attorneys that would work with me. And I'd also immediately go to the law schools and recruit like crazy the best and brightest justice-oriented lawyers that believe in ending mass incarceration, that believe in preventing crime and getting people help before they commit crimes, such as mental health treatment, drug addiction treatment, veterans, PTSD treatment. And so I'm into preventing crime, getting to the root of the crime. That's why I call myself the Radical Law Center. That's my law firm, because radical means you get to the root of it. It's like a radish, the rat, you know. And so I'm that's what I believe in. I believe in equality. I'm against racial profiling. Obviously, I would dismiss a case that was the only reason they were pulled over was based on racial profiling. They fight against that when I do motions like that. I support the Equal Protection Clause. I support the Fourth Amendment. If it's clear that they are basing their case on illegally obtained evidence based on unreasonable searches and seizures, I would not fight a motion dismiss based or to suppress based on illegal searches like they do every single time. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, why don't you start with explaining to people how the top two election system works in California in your race. So how you get from the nonpartisan primary to the general election.
Okay, yes. So on March 5th, there's going to be an election. You're going to see 12 names on there, including mine. They're not going to have party designation, unlike some, like, you know, Congress or president. And they do list our, like, our title, like our, I'm a criminal defense attorney. My opponents have kind of misleading titles, but we can get into that later. And anyway, so if someone gets 50% plus one vote, it's over. They're the district attorney. That is almost not going to happen for sure in this case, because there's 12 candidates. So whoever gets the top two votes, which could be pretty low with these many candidates, will then go into the general election in November. And then whoever gets the most votes in November becomes the district attorney. Now, I'm in favor, probably like a lot of your viewers, in ranked choice voting, because unfortunately, a lot of the left and the left press, they're getting behind Gascon. They don't realize what's really going on. They don't realize that he can't enact his policies. So they've gotten behind him because he does have a better chance at this point. I mean, he is going to probably be one of the top two candidates, although I was shocked actually when I was getting signatures, every single person, even people I consider pretty progressive, are like, we got to get rid of Gascon. And so I'm into ranked choice voting, because then people can vote their conscience, they could vote for me, and then they wouldn't have to worry and then vote for Gascon as their number two, or Chemerinsky is relatively liberal as their number two. And then they wouldn't worry about, like, allegedly throwing away their vote. And then wouldn't they rather have two, you know, progressive, one really progressive, one relatively progressive candidates and the top two and be guaranteed someone better than these right-wing mass incarcerator fearmongers? So that's my pitch for ranked choice voting. I still think they should vote for me, because Gascon's going to get in the top two no matter who they vote for. And so they might as well vote for me for the same reason. So we can at least have the choice will be the two, I guess, best of the 12 candidates.
Yeah, let me just comment on these nonpartisan primaries. Top two, they're doing top four in Alaska. Top five is on the ballot for Nevada and maybe some other states coming up. And what that does is take away the nomination from parties. And, you know, district attorney is not so much a partisan office in terms of the district attorney follows all the platform positions of a party, but a lot of voters look to the party label as a shorthand because they don't know all the candidates. So what you have with these nonpartisan primaries is it's open to the people with the most money to get the name recognition and takes it away from parties. So in California, with top two, the Greens rarely get past the nonpartisan primary to the general election. Whereas if we had party primaries, every party would get their candidate in the general election. And the people advocating this top two, top four, top five are being dishonest when they call them open primaries. Open primaries have been party primaries. It's just the parties say, if you're not registered in our party, you can still vote. And it varies from state to state and party to party in some states like New York, where you have the option. But the point is, they're still party primaries. And people like the idea of open primaries. So I think they're kind of misleading people in that regard. So my basic editorial comment is ranked choice voting, yes. Nonpartisan primaries, no. But I'll stop editorializing. And I see we've had a number of questions in the chat. So why don't we get to those? Mike Feinstein, I have a question for Dan. The incumbent George Gascon ran as a progressive 4 years ago. Every other candidate other than yourself, that means Dan, is to the right. What is your messaging to progressives on why they should vote for you in the primary rather than Gascon, since there is no ranked choice voting?
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. I know Mike, he's a great guy. He's a kind of my political guru. And when I first ran for governor as a Green Party candidate, I was trying to reach out to him, and he reached out to me and gave me a lot of great advice. And he might have asked that question right before I did sort of explain it. So basically I'm saying, even though there's no ranked choice voting, Gascon's going to get in the top two. He's all the polls. He's at the top. He has a lot of support. He has a lot of money. He's going to get in the top two. All the DAs that are running and the right-wing judges and the federal prosecutors, they're people aren't into that. LA County is relatively progressive compared to the rest of rest of California and the rest of the country. So he's going to be in the top two no matter what. So I'm saying, let those people who really like him vote for him. But if you're truly progressive, you truly believe in fixing the broken criminal legal system, then I'm the guy. I'm the guy who actually knows what's happening in the courts. I go all over the county. None of these other opponents go in courtrooms or courthouses, such as San Fernando, which is probably the most rogue of courthouses in terms of the DA's office there. And they've probably never been there. I don't know if Gascon's even stepped foot in that courthouse and seen what's going on. So if your first choice, if you're progressive, should be me, and you should vote your conscience. Gascon's going to get there no matter what. You're not splitting the vote. You're not going to keep him from getting in and having some right winger go against me. So that's how I tell people why they should vote for me.
Chris Plankenhorn, Greens often have strong critiques of our justice system, but rarely run for positions such as DA that would allow them to make changes to the system. Can you talk about the importance of running in these races?
Yeah, I think it's important for anyone who is, you know, into reforming the justice system for the better to run in these offices. Even if I don't make it to the top two, I'm considering this a huge success. I've been able to get in most of the debates. I was shut out of an early one. And critique Gascon, critique all the other candidates, and really get my message out there. So no matter what, I consider it a total victory. In 4 years, unless something crazy happens, I'm going to run again, either as the incumbent or as probably the top challenger. So I'm just building, you know, the campaign. I entered late, unfortunately, because I wasn't going to run. But then the DA's office did so many outrageous things in my cases, filed vindictive prosecutions because they were trying to get around the judge's decision in one case. They filed another one because I won the trial on the felony my client was factually innocent. So I got the acquittal on the felony, but they got a lesser included misdemeanor, which is not that big a deal. In fact, I've asked them to go for it, but we put that in there because I thought maybe the jury would want to do something. And then they sought to punish my client. I'm not getting too into the details. It's on appeal, but the most vindictive prosecution thing I've ever seen. I filed a motion for vindictive prosecution. They went after me saying that it was misconduct to accuse them of prosecutorial misconduct when it was blatant misconduct. And they wanted I wrote a motion for the judge to order me to report myself to the bar when they had engaged in the misconduct. Of course, he didn't find any of us engaging in misconduct. Most judges don't get into that, but we'll see what happens on appeal. Oh, and so, yeah, so I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent, but so yeah, so I entered late. Unfortunately, I haven't, you know, don't have the fundraising in place as much as some of my opponents. But what I say is, okay, Nathan Hochman, he is running. He was the Republican candidate for attorney general. I also ran in that race. I knew I wasn't going to win. I'm obviously the Democrat, Rob Bonta, who is the incumbent. Everyone knew he was going to win. But I entered the race for the Green Party with the Green Party because our goal was to get 2% of the vote. A lot of us got it who ran in the, we did a left unity slate. And a lot of us got the 2%. And I was pretty sure I was going to get it because there's only five candidates in that race. But my point is, in LA County, I was against Nathan Hochman. I literally spent not a dime on my campaign except for the filing fee and my statement, which is $25 a word. And Hochman spent $2.7 million on that campaign. I got 103,000 votes in LA County, which is where we're running right now. And he got 190,000. So he didn't get twice my votes, but outspent me $2.7 million to nothing. So I always say that in debates, and I don't think he likes it when I say that, because he's trying to buy this election. He can't buy this election. He's obviously a right-wing Republican. He changed his party to independent right before this election, trying to trick people to think he's really independent. We can't be tricked. We can't be bought. It's absurd that he's doing that. Actually, a lot of the candidates are former Republicans, which is kind of shocking. Most of them are running as Democrat now because they know that's who gets most of the votes in LA County. And my thing is, there's a famous Supreme Court case that says prosecutors are supposed to seek justice, not win at any cost. So my opponents who are changing their party at the last minute, making false statements, using misleading ballot designations, they're trying to win at all costs. So why would we want them to be the head district attorney when that's exactly the opposite of what they're supposed to do?
Mike Feinstein, in Green Party history, we've had only 7 Green district attorney candidates in the United States. And he provides a link to the database he keeps. And I can't remember by name, but I do know we've had some in the past. One issue has been stopping the prosecution for marijuana offenses. That's been an issue for a number of Greens that ran. It's been a while since I've heard of those races, because in many jurisdictions, they just don't prosecute, you know, small amounts of marijuana for personal use. So we're winning on that question. So people can look at that, but I think it's a deficit. The DA is so important. If you're active in local politics and local issues and observe how the criminal justice system is so unfair to defendants, minorities, and, you know, I'm sure it's probably just true for LA, but something like, you know, 95% of cases brought end up with a plea deal because the defendants are so, you know, overwhelmed. And one of those issues is if they don't have money, they get a public defender who's underpaid. So I have a question comes out of that, Dan. One issue we've raised in New York is that public defenders should get the same salaries as public prosecutors in the DA's office to help level the playing field and attract, you know, more good lawyers as public defenders. Have you ever, you know, talked about that idea?
Well, I don't know the numbers exactly, but I think in LA County, deputy public defenders pretty much get similar salaries to deputy district attorneys. So that's not really the issue.
Wow.
The government does have more funds, I believe, to investigate, you know, have law enforcement, which has a lot more funds on their side and all that. But the LA in Los Angeles, at least the public defender office is pretty well funded. And then see in LA, there's the public defender, there's the alternate public defender, and then there's this thing called the bar panel. And that's what I'm on. So whenever there's a conflict of interest with the public defender and the alternate public defender, someone on the bar panel, we're private attorneys, but we get paid by the county. And you know, we don't get paid as much as like, you know, Johnny Cochran probably got paid, but per hour, but we get paid pretty well. And the good thing is we get paid per hour. So we, and some judges will cut your bills, including Judge Olson, who's running right now. I please vote against her if you're in LA County. But most of them don't. And so we are paid very well and pretty well, let's say. I'm happy with it. And so 80 or 90% of my cases are indigent defendants. And I also defend victims and witnesses when, let's say, a witness might have a Fifth Amendment issue because they might incriminate themselves. The court will appoint people on this panel to represent them. So I do, I'm the only candidate actually is court appointed to represent victims. Everyone says, you know, defense attorneys are anti-victim. I'm often protecting them from the district attorney's office. That's another reason I ran, because there was this crazy case where they victimized the victim and threw him in jail, which another thing that Gascon said he never would do is throw his own witnesses in jail, but he did it. And there have been some, there was this progressive DA movement. I don't know if they were green. I don't think most of them were greens, but in San Francisco, they recalled him. I believe if he was green, but the person who was DA of San Francisco, I think before Vice President Harris, he was very progressive, I believe. Gascon ran on a very progressive platform. I mean, he got people elected him. They wanted this progressive platform. So then when these DAs and all of them tried to recall him, they failed miserably. They're going against the will of the people. And that's one reason they failed miserably, is because people in LA County are relatively progressive. So he didn't like change course the second he came in. He did exactly what he said, or tried to do exactly what he said he was going to do. And so 2 weeks later, they were trying to recall him. I think they had to wait legally 90 days because you can't just recall someone who gets elected. That's, you know, trying to undo an election. In most cases, the recalls are anti-democratic. I mean, if someone in office does something really egregious or commits a crime, I could see a recall being legitimate. But most of the time, they're trying to undermine democracy. The special elections are done on off times, which usually have lower voter turnout, which is more conservative. And it's just a way to undo the will of the people. And now there are election deniers that I'm running against. They claim that the county registrar didn't count correctly their signatures, and that's why they didn't get it on the ballot. It's untrue. It's because nobody wanted this recall except for these right wingers. And when I ran for governor as a Green Party, I think the only candidate, there might have been one other, who was actually campaigning against the recall, but I wanted to be an alternate. So I consider that a win because the recall failed. I don't know how much I had to do with it, but I consider that a victory. And I consider the AG thing a victory. So I'm not just, you know, I'm not just running to run. I have goals and I'm reaching them.
Well, I'm glad to hear public defenders are decently paid in Los Angeles County. It's not the case here in New York. Our public defenders are indigent themselves. And it's probably true in a lot of states. So that's an issue for people to look into locally.
Yeah, they definitely should get paid equally to prosecutors. I mean, that's outrageous if they're not.
Yeah. No, it's a many multiples difference in this county, Onondaga, where I've been defended by public defenders. And they were poorer than I was. I had a good job as a Teamster at UPS.
And public defenders are good here. I like a lot of my clients or people want to hire me said, oh, I don't want a public pretender or whatever, or they're working with in cahoots with the DA. That's not true. They fight hard for their clients. They're just like private attorneys. Some are good, some are bad. I never, discount the public defenders here. A lot of them are very, very good attorneys. And so, I mean, they're good attorneys here. So don't be upset if you have to get a public defender, but a lot of clients, like they call us state appointed, really county appointed. Are you state appointed? And I go, yeah. Like, oh, thank God. Which, the only thing better about us is that we do get paid per hour and we have way fewer cases probably. And so we're kind of motivated to really, and we have the time to really work the cases. So I can see why we have a slight advantage over public defenders. And plus, I'll leave it. Well, I give everyone my phone number, cell phone. They call me 24 hours a day. A lot of public defenders don't do that.
Violet at Content Boutique. Dan, how will you deal with the homeless issue?
Okay, well, One thing I would do, I mean, it's hard as DA to cure the issue. I mean, fix the issue. It's hard as anybody. I mean, if they could easily, it'd be done. But one thing I wouldn't do is criminalize being unhoused. And that happens sometimes. I have these clients, they're homeless. They just go in and out of jail constantly. We don't get them into programs. We don't get them housing. We need to have like homeless courts. We need to have, you know, drug courts. We need to get people treatment and mental health treatment instead of, not that everyone homeless has these problems, but I'm just saying that would at least make a dent and get people help instead of just throwing them in jail and they just go in and out, in and out. It doesn't help them. Here's another thing. I wouldn't seek cash bail on, most offenses, but definitely misdemeanors and low-level felonies. And unless they're high, like clear and convincing evidence that someone's a flight risk and a danger to the community, I wouldn't even seek bail at all. Because people, even on misdemeanors, they lose their jobs. You know, most people don't want to keep, well, can't keep their job if they can't get to their job and they're stuck in jail fighting some sometimes frivolous misdemeanor charge. They'll plead guilty to anything to get out of jail so they can work and support their families. And, you know, people lose their homes because they lose their jobs. And so I would make a small dent into the problem. Also, we need stronger rent control here. So people don't lose their homes in the first place. And if we had stronger laws, which I could, you know, as, you know, the top DA in LA County, I would have some voice at least to propose these things and talk to the LA, you know, county supervisors and all that, and legislators in Sacramento. We could have stronger rent control and we could prosecute landlords who violate these laws. Even now, there's laws that they violate just to get people out of their home so they can raise the rent, even when there is some rent control. So, which there is some in LA. So those are the main things I see as DA. So I don't know. I'm open to any other ideas, of course. If anyone has any suggestions, I'm open to anything that's of value.
At war with dust, is the adversarial legal model one we should seek to preserve or move beyond?
I haven't researched this issue too much, but I am in favor of the adversarial legal model. I know some countries have, what do they call it? The inquisitor model, basically, where there's just one person who's supposed to be objective and then decides, what course to take. I think that was one of the problems with the Amanda Knox case. I think that was in Italy. They have the inquisitor model, and it's great if you have a great inquisitor. Was that what they're called? Inquisitor. But horrible if you have a bad one. So I think the adversarial system does at least, you know, keeps everybody honest. Now the prosecutors are supposed to be, basically neutral. They're supposed to seek justice. They're not supposed to win at any costs. Now, of course, the problem is we know that at least 5% of people in prison are factually innocent. And I believe it's way higher. I was surprised when I became a criminal defense attorney how high the percentage of my clients are literally factually innocent. That was another case. I had one where if they would have just watched the video, they would have seen my guy was innocent, but they didn't even take the time to watch like a 5-minute video before charging him with something. So, and shows he wasn't the guy. There's two other guys. So I do think it's, it's obviously not perfect. And if the prosecution's office are good, like I hope I will be, then it is a good system because we're seeking justice. The defense attorneys are fighting zealously for their clients, as they should, protect their rights, hold the government to their burden to prove a case beyond the reasonable doubt and protect their Fourth Amendment rights and the right to trial, all that. And so I think it's I'm sure maybe there's a better system. I'd be happy to hear about it. It'd be hard to implement it. But I'm in favor of jury nullification. It's kind of a different area, but because I think that is what the founders wanted, the jury to decide. So I kind of fight a little bit on that when I'm in court. I'm open to, I'd like to hear what other people's ideas are of a different system.
I think jury nullification is another issue that Greens have run on in the past when they ran for DA or sheriff. But anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about marijuana. And luckily, the law finally changed. So small amounts of marijuana, simple possession is not a crime anymore. But there's still this issue is whether they can use it, like the smelling marijuana, to stop someone and search their car. The law is, I think, kind of going the way that they can't, but they can claim, well, if we smell marijuana, then they probably had a lot that for sales and selling it's still a crime. I'm against, for simple possession, I'm against, I wouldn't charge it. I think it's criminalizing addiction. My opponents say, well, it's not illegal to be an addict, but it's illegal to possess drugs. Well, I mean, if you're an addict, you're going to possess drugs. And so you're criminalizing a health condition. But anyway, yeah, jury nullification. I do believe in it a lot, you know, like, you know, some crime like prostitution, things, gambling, some things that people, I mean, I'd call them victimless crimes. I know obviously people say, well, they're the victim or whatever. But I wouldn't even charge those. But if they were charged, I think the defense attorney should be able to argue jury nullification. I mean, jurors can do it on their own, but you just can't argue it legally.
Dan's website is on the screen. And so people can look at that. He's also got a donate button there. So he could use the money, as he was explaining. He's up against some very rich people with some rich backers, and they're to the right. So he's done well with minimal funds in the past, so your money will be well spent.
Yeah, Hockman has the most money. I don't know if he's the most right wing. He has the most money. Chemerinsky is relatively liberal, has a lot of money. His father is the dean of Berkeley Law School, a very famous attorney. I'm sure he can raise money very quickly by calling any attorney in California. But you can't buy a selection. As long as we get a fair shake in the media, which I haven't gotten really, then even the progressive press, like a lot of them have ignored me, not you, of course, but because they're trying to, they don't want me to take votes from Gascon. And I think if I get a fair shake, you know, one television appearance is worth more than thousands of lawn signs that pollute the planet anyway.
Yeah, we have another link we'll put up here at some point. It's some media coverage that did include Dan and included all the candidates. It's questions and profiles of the candidates, which, you know, I read. I think Dan comes across very well in that. But yeah, media is the problem. You know, I had that as a huge problem in 2020. I mean, my problem wasn't just the corporate media ignoring me. It was the progressive media didn't want anybody to know about me because they wanted people to vote for Biden to stop Trump, which is understandable, but not their job as media people. They should let people know what their options are and let the voters decide.
Yeah, I've been talking to some election attorneys actually about some equal time challenges to, I mean, it only applies to broadcast, TV and radio, and it's really, it almost doesn't even exist anymore. But I've been looking into it a little bit.
So,
and another thing, there's one debate, they put us in order of fundraising, which is crazy. And so I had the least amount of funds, which I actually turned against them because then I had an excuse to stand up and address everybody because my back was to half the audience. So actually I turned it around, but I mean, that's absurd they've had polls. Rick Caruso is this billionaire out here. He had a poll. He only included six of the candidates and then tries to say, oh, well, you know, even some of the candidates that are actually doing well in other polls, he didn't include. So it's just so biased. It's so crazy what's going on here. And Hockman's has commercials every 5 seconds on Fox, and they won't even have me as a guest.
Mike Feinstein, Dan, what have been your most memorable moments from the debates you have participated in?
Well, the first one was my favorite because it was all attorneys in the audience. And they were just, they knew what I was saying was totally true. And they were just like, when I said, one of the first things I said is Gascon's line deputies ignore everything he does, he wants or supposedly wants. And everyone's like cheering. And even Gascon, he's pretty much laughing because he's never been, right before that debate, the first time I ever talked to him, I go, have you been following my campaign? He's like, oh, no. And I go, well, I'm saying you're too harsh on crime. And he sort of started laughing, but I'm the only guy really going after him for the truth. And I've gone to some of these right-wing debates and or areas. And this guy, one of the candidates has this huge, like, not huge, but he has a lot of fans. They come to all the debates. They boo me, hiss at me. Security actually insisted on walking me to my car after that debate because people are so hostile. And the one thing they get so hostile about is I say, this is the thing that gets them every time, I say violent crime, rapes and murders have gone down since Gascon's taken office. It's not, he doesn't deserve the credit. It's just, you know, crime is so complex to say who the DA is causes something. And they just boo me like crazy. And yeah, and theft crimes have gone up, but I blame the fear mongers. And I really do believe this is true because they're misleading everyone. They're telling them that nothing will happen to you if you go into a store and steal stuff because Gascon won't prosecute. That is totally untrue. And of course, you're going to get people doing this more because they're being misled to think they won't get caught. They won't even get arrested. They're telling them, which is not true. I get these cases all the time. And so I guess So one of the debates, the one at this really right-wing place. So there's this guy named Hitami who always brings his fan base there. And so he did his opening and they're like cheering like crazy. And so then I was like pretty much the next person. And I said, well, if you're into, you know, justice and reducing crime and ending mass incarceration and equality, vote for me. And if you're against those things, vote for Hitami. And everyone started cheering, Hitami, Hitami. It was so funny. And so that's one of the most memorable moments, I guess.
Ashley R., any pushback against companies like Airbnb?
Pushback by me or by other people? I'm not sure what that means, but I haven't been involved with any Airbnb issues. It hasn't come up. Not sure. I mean, if there's laws, then you can enforce them if they're, you know, deal with short-term rentals, but I haven't heard anything from the Airbnb lobby or the anti-Airbnb lobby. So I don't know too much about that.
Mike Feinstein, Dan, you've talked a lot about racial profiling and racial bias in the system. What are some examples of that in LA County?
All right. Well, one thing I talk about is, well, I talk about a lot of things. One thing, if you're not white, you're more likely to get stopped by police. You're more likely to get searched by police. Then you're more likely to get arrested and then charged. And then you're often charged with higher charges, more serious charges, overcharged. And then you might be more likely to get convicted. And then if you're are convicted, you're probably more likely to get higher sentences. And one of the issues is gang enhancements. That's the one thing that Gascon's sort of been good on. I mean, he has been good on it in filing. I said he fights it on resentencing. But they are racist. They're inherently racist. People join so-called gangs when they're like 12 or 13 just for protection in that neighborhood. Often they need. Not everyone joins a gang. Some, you know, can not. They have a real good support system, but not everybody does. Or, you know, people like me are lucky. In LA County, 99% of gang enhancements are alleged against Blacks and Latinos. And everyone's like, well, they're the ones in the gangs. Well, no, because if you're a Proud Boy or whatever, you know, if you're in a white gang or if you're in a deputy gang, the deputies here actually have their own gangs. They're not charged with gang enhancements. So, or another thing is, so you don't have to be in a gang to be accused of being doing a crime for the benefit of the gang. So I had a case where my guy just happened. I mean, he lived in a neighborhood with gangs in it, and he knows some people, but he never was in a gang. He just happened to be near some guy talking to him when another guy was doing some gang graffiti. So they allege, this is Jackie Lacey before Gascon took office, they allege a gang enhancement, which turned this misdemeanor graffiti case into, like, I think he's facing 9 years in prison now, this guy, who's totally innocent anyway. And luckily, Gascon came in and he struck the gang enhancements. Then they said, well, we couldn't prove his felony graffiti, so it was a misdemeanor, and then they just did diversion. They had to stay out of trouble for 6 months. They dismissed the case. So it's the difference between dismissing a case against an innocent guy and having some guy facing 9 years in prison where he might take a deal for 3 years or something, or a probation, felony probation, just to not go to prison. I mean, it's just outrageous. So that's what, so if a white person commits, let's say they sell some drugs, they'll say, oh, well, they're trying to make money, you know, or maybe support their own habit. Where if a black or Latino man sells drugs, they're saying, oh, well, they're going to give that money to the gang, and it's for the benefit of the gang. It's going to go to the Mexican mafia or something. And usually they're just trying to just make a buck. So they're not for the benefit of the gang. There's also another issue with race in terms of pimping and human trafficking charges. So if you're white and you have a friend who's a prostitute or a girlfriend, which does happen, then you're just a friend of a prostitute, or at the most, a John. If you're black and you have a friend who's a prostitute, then all of a sudden you're a pimp or a human trafficker. And luckily there's this Racial Justice Act law that just came into being, and now it's getting litigated like crazy in the courts, and they're addressing some of these issues. And Gascon has one of the most racist deputy district attorneys. She does all this racial misconduct in every trial. Everybody knows who she is, and I can't believe Gascon still lets her do trials. It's just outrageous.
Josh Rothstein, if Dan wants to be taken seriously, he needs to spend a lot of time explaining why significantly reduced sentencing makes community safer.
Okay, happy to do so. Well, most people are over-sentenced if they're serious long sentences. Most people age out of crime. Yeah, most crimes are committed by people in their 20s, 30s, early 30s. If they're getting 60 years in prison and they're there when they're 70 or 80, you're just over-punishing them, and you're not giving them any hope to better themselves while they're in prison, so that's one aspect. So people don't get better by going to prison for a long time. Occasionally people do, but most people don't. And so that's why they're counterproductive, these extremely long sentences. And I'm for, instead of even putting people in prison in the first place, if it's relatively low level felony, you get them help. You get a lot of it's drug related. We got to deal with the drug problem or whatever, maybe legalize drugs as the answer. I know that's controversial and with mixed results. And even just putting someone in jail, even a misdemeanor can prevent you from working, getting a job. It hurts for housing, certain kind of housing, education. It's harder to get education if you have a criminal history, even misdemeanors. So for misdemeanors, the goal should be diversion. So they don't have a criminal record when they're done with it. Now, of course, if they do it a billion times, of course, maybe not diversion or something, but, so that's one aspect. Keeping people, like I said, on high bail where they lose their jobs, that can cause crime. Now all of a sudden their children lose their breadwinner, so they might have to commit crimes. And we got to get to the root of the problem. It's not just so much sentencing. It's we got to, address poverty, drug addiction, mental health. We got to get to the root of the problem. It's way better, obviously, to prevent a crime from happening in the first place. And instead of spending millions of dollars on these failed recalls or suing the county, some of these DAs are suing Gascon. The money doesn't come from Gascon. It comes from us, the taxpayers. And instead of using that money for that, why don't we put it into programs that prevent crime or that help victims? And it's just outrageous. And so that's just how some of the ways that reducing sentencing makes a community safer. I have a lot of clients, their dad is in prison for life, then they're gonna, you know, it's just a cycle that keeps going on and on.
Ashley R., do you think that MMJ should be federally rescheduled and covered by health insurance, eventually, hopefully, Medicare for all?
Yes. I think anything that's, you know, helpful, if, you know, they're talking about all kinds of other drugs that are been made illegal that could actually benefit people, why shouldn't they be covered by health insurance? And of course, medical, Medicaid, you know, M4A or whatever, I never heard that expression, but yeah. And yeah, it should be, and they should be decriminalized. I mean, there should be no law against marijuana. I mean, that's just absurd. That's part of the war on drugs for, you know, for over 50 years. It's just crazy. Nixon started this crazy war on drugs that has ruined a lot of America. And yeah, they should be covered, and they should be not even illegal. It shouldn't be illegal federally or statewide, but it's already, it isn't illegal to own it in California, but federally, technically you're violating federal law just by having a small amount of marijuana.
Ashley R., absolutely. But with regards to, I think, SA means sexual abuse cases like Danny Masterson, et cetera, then reducing sentencing is ridiculous.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not saying every sentence should be reduced. I'm against enhancements precisely because the sentencing for the underlying crime is very high. I think he got 30 to life, and which to life means he probably will never get out. That's what people don't understand. They get upset because someone's going to get 25 to life instead of 50 to life. Well, most, unless they're the perfect ideal, you know, inmate prisoner, they're not going to get out unless they're like a youth or they're so sick that the prison doesn't want to pay for them anymore when they get older. So they're already extremely high sentences. And yes, yeah, serious crimes, we're going to take them seriously. Okay. And now, I don't know if you know what's going on with Danny Masterson. There's been a hit, supposedly, I've heard this, there's been a hit on his life by this gang, this prison gang called the Gay Boy Gangsters. And now they've greenlit him. And so I've heard all kinds of crazy stuff going on with that. So believe me, being in prison is not, for any amount of time, is not a good thing for you, for the person who's actually there.
Okay, Dan, anything else you would like to tell people? I want to remind them that look for his website and look for the donate button there and send him some money for his campaign. But Dan, any last message for people?
Yeah, and any amount helps, like $27, as Bernie would say, or whatever. But I would just say, I actually think I am the only guy who can beat Gascon. People who don't like him, he's not going to, any right-wing person is not going to win against him. He has the resources. He's going to have the Democratic Party behind him. He's, you know, I'm the only guy, I think, that's more progressive. I think LA County is more progressive. They are more progressive than mainstream Democrats. We're heavily in favor of Bernie, say, for instance. So I think I'm the guy that can beat Gascon, and I'm the guy who's actually going to implement these reforms that are going to better the criminal justice system.
Okay. Well, Dan, thanks for coming on. I hope people, if they're not in Los Angeles County, they are aware that the justice system, the DA office, sheriffs that are elected are relevant, you know, to what we're doing. And we get more engaged in that. And if they're in Los Angeles County, they'd be sure to come out March 5th. And vote for you.
And if you're not in LA County, you can still donate. You can still tell your friends in LA County. You can follow me on Twitter. Everyone's giving me trouble. I don't have enough Twitter followers. It's only because I made my account inactive and I put it up and I lost all my followers. But yeah, anything helps. So spread the word, even if you don't live in LA County.
And what's your Twitter handle?
It's at Kapelowitz for the number four DA. If you type in, start typing Kapelowitz, I think it'll show up.
Yeah, that answers another question I saw in the chat about if you had a Twitter. So good. Okay, well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much. I finally have time to talk more than the 1 minute soundbite to give you debates or on radio and stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we could offer that. And next week, I don't have a guest scheduled, so we'll go back to your questions and answers and comments and talk about some of the questions people put in the chat. Even though we're talking about a DA race, they were asking about Israel-Palestine and climate issues and trains. So, you know, next week it'll be open to all issues. And same time, same place, 3 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday. And I also saw people talking about Angela Walker, which we haven't had her on for a while. I'll give her a call this week and, you know, see if she wants to come on one of the podcasts soon. So thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you so much.